All right, guys. Welcome to another edition of the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I am Brad Howard, and Happy New Year. We've got John on the phone, and we're going to be talking about a couple of different things today. Number one, one of the things that he and I talked about on the phone the other day were all the ambiguous terms that you hear in the health, diet, and fitness industry. And actually, the funny part about it is that those terms themselves are pretty much ambiguous. But first off, since it is the new year, we kind of wanted to give you guys an idea of the direction we're going to be taking in 2010. I know John's got a couple of surprises for you he wants to talk about. So go ahead and talk about a couple of things you've got in mind.
Okay, I don't know if they're all surprises. The Adonis University starts January 12th, so that's not necessarily a surprise, as most people kind of have an idea about that. I'll be explaining a little bit more about that tomorrow, I guess, as well. So that's starting. I'm going to be doing coaching as well for people who kind of feel like they need more of a more one-on-one type work. So that's going to be something we're going to be starting up in a month or so. And I'm in the middle of researching and developing, putting together some new advanced workouts, another level of workouts, as well as some of the home-based workouts that me and Brad are working on, and the chain workouts as well. So there's a bunch of different stuff that are taking shape.
Yeah, so and the advanced one, that's another 12-week program, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's not like the rage ones or like the two-week things. This is another entire sequence, I guess you could say, of workouts that, you know, a person after they go through the first 12 weeks would be ready to rock with.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. And you're working with a couple other guys who are actually talking to some people about that too?
Friends? The guys I'm working with do their research in periodized strength training and all that kind of stuff. And they're actually, they work with a lot of pro level athletes, and this is just what they do, like advanced biomechanics stuff. So as good as it gets is where these guys come from. So, I can't really name names of where they are, who they've worked with, but you know, it's as good as it gets. So that's who I'm basically working with to develop these.
Right. And then on my side, we've got a couple of other things going down the pipeline. You know, a lot of people have been really enjoying the lifestyle oriented podcasts and things like that. I've still got the High Gravity Mail Report coming out. We're actually going to be doing something a little bit more with that as well, and kind of going a little bit in that direction as far as helping you guys out with that type of stuff. And then we're going to be doing a lot more event based programming. So, you know, we're talking about, obviously we've got the podcast, which you guys definitely enjoy. But we're also talking about doing more teleseminars and webinars as soon as some of this stuff comes up, some of these new age, cutting edge, because we're on the cutting edge of pretty much everything. I mean, even though our goals are to keep it simple and really get it down to ridiculous for you to where it's manageable and you actually get results, I mean, all the stuff that we talk about is really cutting edge. So we're going to stay on that. And then, of course, John brought up about a month ago about how he wanted to get into live events, and so where we actually do, you know, conferences and seminars and things like that for you guys. So on a live basis, you know, a stage, or we'll get that part figured out. But it's going to be lots of fun stuff, man. I don't think there's not much else that we really know that we're going to do that you can think of. I know we got a lot of things that are coming our way that, you know, people want to see. Obviously more like shirts and stuff. People like those, but can you think of anything else right off the bat?
That's a lot already.
Yeah, it really is. It really is a lot. So that's kind of what we got going on. All right, so for today, we were going to talk about some ambiguous stuff. I guess kind of to start off with, I mean, it was really funny because I know John has this thing when he gets comments on the blog about people saying, well, this is healthier than this, about how there's really no real definition of what's healthy, what's health, and stuff like that. So what are some of the terms like that that you really wanted to talk about that are kind of just kind of sweep under the rug type terms?
Well, it's the root of the entire health, diet, fitness industry is the ambiguity of those terms themselves and any other term you want to like kind of subcategorize under those things. So, for instance, I was just talking to somebody today about this. Somebody in the forum was asking about weight loss, and I mean, anyone who's been following my stuff knows that I just talk about calories in, calories out if you're interested in weight loss. And then people are like, well, isn't that's not healthy? Like, what, you know, don't you have to eat healthy foods for that? And so all I ask back is, well, what do you mean healthy? And then that's when those people. I don't know if I'm the first person to ever ask them that question, but everyone seems to have this sort of vague, faded-edged circle of what they think healthy, like things inside that circle are healthy and things outside of that circle aren't, but they can't really pin down exactly what they mean. And so it becomes very ambiguous right away and very, like, it's just not defined at all. Like, what is health? What isn't health? And it's just, there's just no end to it. And so when you see somebody marketing or talking about something being healthy or not, that's kind of, you know, unless they can drill down and tell you how they've defined that, like measured it, like, is it a measurable thing? Is it, give me a number, give me a better answer than, well, it's just healthier than not. Cause otherwise we could just argue all day about what we thought is healthy or not with no actual measurement to it. So, that alone, that term alone is impossible to define. I mean, if you look up the World Health Organization's term for health, it started as the absence of disease, which is absurd because, like, somebody who's living with manageable diabetes wouldn't be considered healthy, but they could live, like, a long life, but they actually have a measurable disease. So, by that definition, you'd say they're not healthy. So the definition had to be slightly changed. So it's the absence of disease and malcontent and the feeling of well-being and all of this stuff all wrapped in one. And when you look at it, you're like, and it's like, you know, includes the psychological aspect too. And then you're looking at this actual definition and it's so precise and so pristine and so perfect that the only moment I can imagine fitting into that definition is either if you like drinking, when you're rip-roaring drunk and just having a ball, or maybe in the middle of sex. and not just like crappy sex, but good sex.
Ah, exactly.
So that's like it's such a ridiculous term. Like, I don't think anyone on earth could actually achieve what their definition of health even is. It just doesn't make any sense. So I think, you know, the more we learn about the human body and the more we learn about health in general, health, whatever, just how the body works, I guess is a better way of saying it, the more we realize there's no such thing as health. There's just your own personal definition of what kind of state you want to be in, both physically and psychologically. Like, you know, and if it's a state you can manage and you enjoy it, or it's just where you need to be functional or get work done and with your relations, then that's health to you. But no one can really tell you what it is because it just you can't splash that term across the entire population. It'll never work.
Right. It's like it almost to me sounds like a manipulation term. Why can't I talk today? But it sounds like that, like kind of like scam, or that person's a scammer, or you're not being healthy, or you're not. It's one of those things that people use. I can hear it to kind of in one fell swoop kind of attack someone and make them feel like they're being bad or doing something wrong.
And, you can use it to discredit anything you want because since it doesn't mean anything, but everyone has this kind of vague idea of what they think it should mean, mm-hmm. You can just label something unhealthy and then someone will immediately turn their attention to find why it's unhealthy. Own definition. So it absolves you of even having to come up with a definition for it. Because the other person will look at it going, well, they said it's unhealthy. Well, right. Okay, let me go through my mental like catalog of what I think is healthy and unhealthy. And you'll literally look for it to be in your unhealthy list instead of your healthy list.
Right. I mean, it's funny because I remember back when Pilon was on TV on the Mike and Juliet show or whatever, one of the doctors, I think, or either the nutritionist or whatever, that when he was presenting Eat, Stop, Eat, and they were kind of doing their little thing real quick, and she said something, I'm just concerned this isn't a healthy way to lose weight or something like that. And I was kind of like, well, okay.
That's completely unfair.
Yeah, that's a vague attack, you know what I mean? And it was interesting that was kind of the first thing that came off, like, bam, that was the first one, and then the, like, metabolism stuff came off, too.
Oh, they told him backstage that their job is to play the contrarian role. Like,
sure.
He was coached backstage that, look, when we go out there, no offense, but we have to take the opposite opinion. So by rule, they were going to literally attack him.
Right.
And they disclosed this to him right before he went out there.
Right.
So he tried to defuse it as quickly as possible. He actually did a good job because if you actually watch all the back episodes, they attack everybody in that diet and health fitness series they did. and he actually went through and reviewed them. He was pretty smart. We reviewed them all and came up with, like, he actually used their terms before they got to use them and actually handcuffed a couple of them, and they were, like, tripping over their words because they're like, you know, the one girl's go-to thing was fruits and vegetables and that, but he said it first. He's like, you want to eat fruits and vegetables. They're your friends. And the nutritionist, that's her line, so he purposely used her line before she could use it, and he actually kind of hamstrung her a little bit because she was, like, searching for – because that was like, kind of her, like, go-to weapon.
Right. So. Yeah, that's funny. I mean, but it's still kind of the same thing, but it's really weird that what the public saw wasn't reality in that thing. I mean, it was basically two people acting and being – they might have actually agreed, but in reality, I mean, what the people saw was a controlled response to – his whatever he was proposing.
And oh yeah, like, well, they, okay, so yeah, they were riding the fact that they were credentialed, you know, whatever, a physician and a nutritionist, whatever that's supposed to mean. So, and since they're on the Mike and Juliet show, people must think that they actually really know what they're talking about. And if people are, you know, dense enough to believe anything they see on TV is real, might actually think that was a real conversation and not a completely contrived one, which we're explaining to you now, it was contrived all the way. So.
Right.
On their standpoint, Brad was trying to just present what the facts of his book, but, I mean, that's not what they were doing there. They were trying to entertain people, right? So
sure.
There's a difference between information and entertainment. So,
right. And it was kind of like Jerry Springer. I mean, even that's – people act like that's, you know, not scripted, but in essence, that's pretty scripted too, I would guess, or at least
sure.
I hear. So it's pretty interesting. So that's – I don't know. That's just interesting to me that – I'm kind of happy we got into this, especially since we're talking about, you know, ambiguous stuff and what people think they know versus what they see. You know, you've got people on TV that are being – and he was actually coached for this. So I don't know. I mean, what should people even think about this type of stuff? I mean, terms. I mean – and the way things are worded, I mean, it's
well, this gets into marketing speak and double talk and like the type of nonsense you hear from a politician where they talk for an hour and don't say a word. The health diet and fitness industry needs these three terms to be as potent and as sort of big as they are and sort of ever present as they are, because it allows them carte blanche to keep marketing things that are either healthy or good for your fitness and whatever. I mean, you know, anyone who's listening right now, if you're listening, what do you think fitness means? Because can anyone even define that? Like, is that, you know, is fitness for a powerlifter the same as fitness for a distance runner, the same as fitness for a sprinter? Like my powerlifting buddies would be mortified if they lost any strength by doing a lot of distance running. So, you know, for the quote fitness they just want to be big and strong. And the stronger they are, the better outfitted they are for what they do. But then a distance runner can't afford to carry that kind of muscle mass and do all that kind of heavy lifting. What they need to be is lean, light, and have a lot of endurance. It doesn't mean either one is more fit. Like, fit's a totally meaningless word. And then everyone else is somewhere in between. Like you know, it's kind of defined – the word fitness anyways is just defined by how – whatever your goal is. And if your goal is to just be sedentary and you couldn't care less about being like any sort of physical measurements of abilities to do exercise – I don't even know what the words are. Like an ability to run a distance in a certain amount of time, or like, you know, ability to get your heart rate up for a certain amount of time. All of these sort of more typical measurements of fitness. If you just couldn't care less about any of those things, well then – yeah, and all you do is sit around watching TV and you're good at sitting around and watching TV, well then you're in the shape you want to be in for that task of sitting around and watching TV. So it's defined, but you have to have like an outcome or, you know, that you're interested in. And then you kind of look back to like, well, how do I get to there? Now everyone probably thinks, well, I don't want to, they probably have a less favorable view of what a body might look like that sits around watching TV. So you probably have some idea of something better than that, but you can't really put your finger on it. And that's kind of, well, I mean, that's where the whole Adonis Index thing comes from in the first place. We actually not only put our finger on it, we tried to put an exact number on it on a way to like measure it and all that kind of stuff. But that's just what we came up with. You may have something else you want. I mean, to us, this is what made sense because we struggled through this for years, being in, you know, the supplement industry and everything we've been through, and, you know, making workouts, you know, being personal trainers, all that kind of stuff. And none of this ever still added up. It was always ambiguous. And we're like, what is it that, like, what the hell are we doing here? Like, what is it that people actually want? So that's how kind of we got to what we got, where we ended up with the, you know, the ratio and how to measure it and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But that's why people are constantly confused. They're like, well, what do I do? Like, is that good or bad for health? Is that good or bad for my fitness? Like, is that the right or wrong way to eat? And that stuff is going to go on forever until you pin down a definition of what you want, and then you test out things that either get you closer to your definition or further away from what you want.
Right. Like when somebody says something like, make sure to eat a, you know, a proper diet or a healthy diet or something like that, I've never really understood that, because you see a lot of different ways to do it. Okay, two perfect examples. Saw two commercials in the last 2 days about, because now what people are figuring out ever since the whole Subway diet thing is that anything can be a diet. Like Taco Bell has their diet now. Special K still has their diet. I read the fine print. Basically, all you're doing is, for the Special K diet, is substituting two of your meals as cereal and then having a regular dinner. Slim Fast is the same way. It's the exact same diet. I mean, basically, you're slim fasting two of those, two shakes, and then having a regular dinner. The Taco Bell diet, this was interesting. I walked in Taco Bell the other day, because typically at lunch I'll go get some of the chicken tacos with no cheese, because they're pretty low in calories and I actually like them. And I walked in and they have this drive-through diet. And they actually disclosed everything. They said that, you know, I forget the girl's name, but engaged in a 1,250-calorie per day diet, part of which was substituting in Taco Bell's low-fat foods or whatever from this certain menu, and it helped her lose weight. A lot of the same way that the Jared guy lost weight with Subway, same thing. He ate veggie subs and like ate twice a day, and he walked like a mile a day or something like that. So that's really interesting, is that a lot of people are jumping on more and more to the whole, you know, it really is only about calories in, calories out. And all these things technically are almost proper diet, or at least that's what they're making you believe.
Well, think of what you said. They were saying it helped them lose weight, and it didn't help them do anything. It's just that almost implies the food itself did something. Like it's the lack of food. It's the food you didn't eat that did it, not the food you
right.
did eat. So it's – and no one really – the problem is there's nothing to market there. Like, the nutrition industry is kind of like hoping no one ever catches on to the idea that it's just calories. That's why that one, I guess from now we're on to defining what diet or healthy eating is. That one has to persist, because eating for weight loss is at complete odds with selling food.
Mm-hmm.
So like, and especially publicly traded food companies who get assessed on a quarterly basis, so they need to somehow increase profits every quarter. So every 3 months they have to somehow sell more stuff. But if there's the same number of people, or more or less the same number of people around in North America, let's just say as an example, their stomachs are only so big. So how much more food can you stuff into these people? Like you can't just keep growing the amount of products you're going to sell and the amount of food you're going to sell. Like, Marion Nestle, a really good food scientist and well-written author in the food industry. In one of her books, she reports that there's, you know, North America produces roughly 3,900 calories of food per day per person, I think, in the United States, if not in the United States and Canada. So in general, there's way more food already being produced than any of us could possibly eat on a daily basis without becoming, like, obese. So
right.
And, but these are being produced by companies who are still need to somehow produce more profits. So, you know, you can't just keep expanding your, you know, like with car companies or any other type of company, you can keep expanding your product line. You can come out with more expensive products. You can come out with more little bells and whistles and trinkets that get attached to the product. There's ways of increasing your profits. But if you sell food, you know, like, you know, picture yourself running a food company. You're like, well, wait a minute. How do we sell this same group of people who only can fit so much food in them? How do we sell them even more food, or how do we sell them even higher priced foods? So that's why major food companies are attaching themselves to and jumping on the organic food bandwagon, and anything that's healthy or anything that's natural, or these exotic kind of food, like foods with health claims, and charging twice as much money for a food that's enriched with a supplement or enriched with an antioxidant or a protein in rinsed cereal. It's all ways of increasing profit because they can't just keep selling you. They can't just keep doing the whole, well, you get this much more for a discount, so just buy it in bulk. They've tried every which way of selling you more actual food, but that's sort of – that's becoming like a rate-limiting thing. Like people just simply cannot or do not need that much more food. So now they're selling you – they're subdividing into healthier food, what they'll call healthier foods, or and riding on even more ambiguous terms like organic or natural and all of these sort of, you know, high antioxidant content foods and, you know, vitamin D enriched, whatever. And it just goes on and on and on forever. And that, you know, so now they can sell you a carton of juice that used to be $2. They can sell you the enriched one for $5.
Right.
So in that same amount of stomach space, they can at least get you to buy the more expensive option, which right. you never needed anyways. And what they rely on is your fear of being unhealthy by saying that this version, the more expensive version, is healthier. And that's the whole, in a nutshell, that's how organic gets marketed. That's how anything that's enriched with anything gets marketed. That's how the whole thing, and low fat, like a more expensive version that has no fat in it. Well, whoever said the fat was bad in the first place. So,
right. Yeah. That's pretty interesting that, that you said, you know, we're just talking about organic a little bit and some of the other terms and healthy and things. You really have to research your definitions in this stuff before you even get, I guess, I don't want to say bamboozled because that's kind of bad, and it's not even scam because it's not really scammed. It's just basically almost preying on the public's non-familiarity with the word, like organic. Like for me, I assumed organic meant there was no pesticides, there's no, you know, none of the stuff that was actually used. It was just kind of grown, you know, organically, like in somebody's pot or something like that. I have no idea. But, you know, come to find out that, yes, they do use pesticides, but they are organic pesticides. And actually, the funny part about it is a lot of the organic pesticides were the pesticides they used to use back in the day, but they found a better way, a less toxic way, and the synthetic ones, and so they started using them. So it could well be, and like I say, I need to do more research on this particular topic before we get into it, but it may well be that the pesticides that are used, the organic pesticides that are used on organic foods are actually worse for you than the other ones.
They can be, yeah. I'm in the middle of researching that right now. Some of them are worse. Some of them end up increasing the cost for no reason. But because because of the rules of the way organic work, the certain pesticides the farmers are forced into using aren't as effective. So certain other pests grow easier, and it just becomes a big mess. And it's also the difference between using genetically modified plants or not. Like trying to grow non-genetically modified plants, which, by the way, almost every piece of food you eat that's grown is genetically modified. So it's a kind of is ridiculous to even think you're not eating GMO already. Some of them they're genetically modified in order to avoid pesticide use. But people who are scared of GMO, you know. GMO meaning genetically modified organism. People who are afraid of GMO don't realize the only reason they did that is so they could reduce pesticide use. So it's just as soon as you hear those terms, there's so much more that goes into them. There's tons of like regulation goes in, lots of research into it. There's, you know, all kinds of politics. Like something that's organic doesn't mean at all that it's any better for you or that it's any more nutritious. I mean, there's research, a good paper just came out showing that testing, you know, conventionally grown vegetables to, quote, organically grown vegetables, the nutrient content's basically identical. So you just paid more for the same thing.
Right.
So it's not, you know, that's just another example of what the ambiguity of these terms and how this industry is constructed. I mean, you have to read hundreds of pages of research before you can figure out, you know, what it is that you're buying at the store. Like, is that even worth the money? And it's not like anything at the store is really going to make you sick. It's just that you could walk out with a $100 grocery bill or the same food for $50. And what would you know, was that extra $100 really worth spending? And I would say almost across the board, it never is.
Right. Yeah. From some of the stuff I've been reading or whatever and kind of drilling into it. And like I say, I'm not even any closer. I mean, or not even as close into it as you are by a long shot. But, you know, it's just been really interesting kind of looking at some of the contrarian points of view of some of this stuff and the things that these people are bringing up. And it's really interesting in that regard. And the other funny thing that you said earlier, talking about eating for weight loss, the only one thing that came to my mind is saying not eating for weight loss would probably be more a better definition.
Oh, yeah, it's never the food you ate. It's how much food you didn't eat. That's, I mean, the idea of finding something you can eat to lose weight, how backwards is that? Like, it's not, there's nothing you can eat to lose weight. Well, that's a play on words, too. That's actually, it's nothing. Like, the less you eat, the more weight you lose. I mean, I was just having a conversation with somebody a couple hours ago about this, and they were asking me about, the guy is in our forum, and the guy said, he's like, is it really just calories in versus calories out? And it still amazes me. Every day, it still amazes me that people find that so difficult to grasp. Like, he was almost like insisting, or I mean, I guess not insisting, but he really, it's been drilled into him through the media, through, you know, through the industry, through, you know, blog, through everything, that there's this healthier way to do it, that there's this better way to do it. And it's almost like he's scared to even try eating less as the first choice. And so I just responded saying, well, why wouldn't you just go for the simplest solution first? You know, and try that and give it an honest go. Give it like a month and see what happens. Now, if you just eat whatever it is that you're eating, whether or not you actually think it's healthy by your definition, just take what you eat and just cut it down by a certain percentage. So say eat 20% less total food. And a month from now, if you've lost weight, kind of there's your answer. I mean, that's it. Because if you think of it the other way around, like, you know, what about low carb? What about low fat? What about all this other stuff? Well, I'd be like, well, if you ate 20% less of everything you're eating, by definition, you've just eaten 20% less carbs than you were eating and 20% less fat than you were eating.
Right.
Because you've just eaten 20% less of everything you just ate, which was probably a mix of carbs, fat, and protein. So, you know, there's your answer. So and I don't know why, but people are so scared to go after the simplest answer. I think it has something to do with people like not wanting to admit that it's actually hard to do, and now that they're putting themselves sort of out there to see, you know, there's a chance to fail. So instead of actually trying it, people would rather like explain away why that's a bogus idea and it's not healthy, and they keep searching, and it just gives them another day of excuses. And, you know, I'm starting to realize some people, all they want is excuses. They don't want results. They want to be a victim for the rest of their life, and they just want to say, oh, woe is me, and self-pity forever. And, you know, even though you could hand the person the solution and they'll be like, no, that's not it.
Right, because there's one piece of something that somebody said that contradicts it. And which is really funny, because when you really think about it, I mean, everything everywhere, there's nothing that is 100% everybody is going to agree on, pretty much. I mean, even when it comes to gravity, I mean, they can't even agree on gravity right now. I just read something the other day about how, or actually yesterday in a magazine, about how they're redefining how gravity is the actual definition and how it's being mixed up between, you know, quantum mechanics and how they're trying to pull time out. I mean, just all this crazy stuff. They can't even agree on gravity right now.
That doesn't change the fact that we stick to the planet. It just we haven't figured out exactly how yet.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So it's the same thing. Weight loss, you could say it's like gravity.
Oh, I see what you're – well, yeah, except for we actually do know how weight loss works. And they're trying to make it as complex as gravity.
Exactly. They're trying to make it complex by saying, you know, well, even though we know the basic mechanism is this, what really is driving it is something really on the molecular level or whatever, and that's what it really is. And let's not worry about this big gross, you know, what the big net effect is. Let's get down to the nitty gritty and worry about that part. Because
in that example, that would be academics arguing probably for the sake of getting more research funding to like prove their theory, which kind of makes sense. And they are dissecting it down and they're defending whatever piece of academia, whatever field they research in. And the only issue is theirs is tough because they can't test it they kind of can, but they're really doing exploratory work where they don't have a lot of room to test it. In the case of weight loss, you can actually test it. You can actually just eat less. You can start with the simplest solution, which is what you should do, and be like, well, what if it's just less? And so you just eat less. And if that worked, There's no reason to ever make it more complex. There's absolutely no reason. That's it. You've got your answer. And then if you're going to argue that, oh, well, it's not healthy, well, you know, come up with your list of what you think healthy is. Like, write down, like, everything you – write your definition of healthy down. Is it a certain blood cholesterol level? Is it a certain blood pressure level? Is it a certain number of heartbeats per your heart rate? Is it an ability to run a certain distance in a certain amount of time? Is it a body weight? Is it a body fat percent? Write them all down. Like your fasting insulin level, like everything you can think of. Measure them all now. Go to your doctor, get your blood work taken, and say, look, I want a physical and I want all of these things measured. And then do whatever it is you think a healthy diet is. And, you know, I would say if you're in talking about weight loss, if you're interested in weight loss, just eat less. And then 4 to 6 weeks from now, if you've actually managed to eat less and be honest about it, and if you've lost some weight, go back and get your blood levels measured and see if you're, quote, healthy. And, you know, that's it. You're your own little experiment of one. And then there's no other way of doing it. You know, who cares what everyone else says? Actually get yourself tested. Like, people always opine about insulin this and, you know, blood level, fat levels that, and all of this stuff that goes into what a healthy diet is. But I don't know too many people who actually test their blood levels. Like, people, when we talk about fasting, like the Eat Stop Eat style and all that, people are like, oh, well, your blood sugar levels are going to go all over the place. I'm like, no, they don't. I actually did a 40-hour fast and measured my – and did glucometer readings of my blood sugar, and they were fine. Like, you know, 30 hours later, they were still normal. So unless you have a – so people are like, well, your blood sugar is going to go all over the place. I'm like, well, no, it doesn't. I measured it. You know, besides the fact that clinical research has well documented that 24 hours of fasting will not affect your blood sugar levels unless you have a clinically diagnosed genetic blood sugar problem, which you'd already know. You wouldn't discover that during a fast. I mean, that's something you'd already know about. Nothing happens to your blood sugar. They even have research to show that people who feel like they're, quote, hypoglycemic and have all these, you know, symptoms of feeling faint and all that stuff, they still get the symptoms even though their blood sugar hasn't changed. So what it actually is revealing, it's probably psychological drug withdrawal that they're going through. So they're basically cranky and irritable, not because anything happened to their blood, but because their blood sugar, but because they just want their next fix.
Right.
And someone took it away from them.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know what's funny? I was just thinking about when you were talking about, you know, just eating less and things like that, especially when we're going into weight loss a little bit. You know, if you change the way you eat, and we kind of talked about this before about how I looked in the Consumer Reports and all the different diets and stuff like that, and how all the different diets that they research, they all basically, I mean, South Beach, Atkins, I mean, you name it, they all basically revolved around about a 1,600 calorie a day diet, which they never disclose in any of these diets. But the funny part about it is that if you actually follow one of these programs and you start to lose weight, which you will if you do it, if you follow it like it's supposed to be followed, the one thing you'll never know is that it was the deficit that actually drove the weight loss.
Well, that's why.
You know what I'm saying?
That's why I'm saying you got to test it without doing all of their rules first.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
If you just eat less as your first test, and you're like, okay, I ate less for 6 weeks and I lost, you know, whatever, 8 pounds. I'm like, okay, well, I know I can lose. I know I can just flat out eat less. It doesn't even matter what it is, just less. And then 6 more weeks, do the most complex carb cycling rotation protein high whatever diet you want, and see how much. But keep the calories consistent and see how much you lose in those 6 weeks. I bet you it's identical. Well, I bet you. I know it is. It'll be identical if your calories are the same. But don't take my word for it. Do it. And if you haven't tried either, you kind of have. You have almost no legs to stand on in the argument, because if you haven't tried them, how the hell do you know?
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, and when researchers have bothered to study these diets, the final conclusion that they're freaking hard to follow, the more rules they have, the worse they are at compliance, and that the only consistent finding through one diet to the next when studied head-to-head is just the calories.
Yeah, and it's still funny to me that, you know, and I we'll move on to something else, because I feel like we beat this to death. But I mean, I guess new people listen every week, so I guess we got to really get into it again. But you know, even the fringe guys, you know, the bodybuilding guys, even roided up as much as they are, I mean, they're still jumping into, you know, 1,200, 1,400, I mean 1,600. I mean, from some of these really big guys, you know, 300 plus pounds where they're starting off at. I mean, they're getting down that low, but it's funny that people don't get down that low themselves. And these guys have extra help helping them, and they're still getting down that low.
Oh, yeah. Like, I know lots of guys who've competed, and towards the last 2-3 weeks before the show, when they're not on track for the weight loss they expected, what's the first thing they do? They just drop their calories even lower. They're like, what do I do? And they just drop their calories. Put it this way. If I held a gun to your head right now, and I'm like, you need to lose 10 pounds in the next 2 weeks, how are you going to do it? Well, I bet you wouldn't put – and if you haven't done it, I'm going to shoot you. I'll bet you that you don't eat an ounce of food for the next 2 weeks. You know, I don't think you're going to go into some complex carb cycling routine. You're just going to, well, okay, I'm not eating. You know, besides probably running on a treadmill for the next 2 weeks straight as well. Your first mode of action should be never not to eat for the next 2 weeks if it was a matter of life and death. So when you put it in those terms, you'd be like, oh, well, yeah, I'm for sure not going to eat. You know, that would be your very first thing.
Yeah, didn't Pilon do a post on that, or do you do a blog post on that? Somebody did a blog post on that.
Brad did it. I did one for muscle building. I'm like, if I pulled a gun to your head and said I'm going to pull the trigger, and if you can't, you need to gain 5 pounds of muscle in the next month, guaranteed. It's like first thing I'd do is go out and find some drugs. So
yeah,
you know, it's like, I'm not going to do no like fancy powerlifting, but whatever. I'm going to go get drugs. You know, as long as you don't shoot me. You know.
Yeah. So, yeah, but then that's pretty extreme, but
yeah, but that's the point is people know how to do it. People just choose to ignore it.
Right, right, right. Gotcha. And we're not, and that was not a.
That's not a plug for using drugs. What I'm saying is to build massive muscles fast. That's how you do it. Everybody knows that's how you do it. To lose weight, everyone knows you just eat less. It's just no people. Aren't in a situation where it's that dire, you know. They would rather kind of toss their little personal lie in there too and find a better way around, not a better way around it, but a more a way that sounds less painful.
Right. You know, one of the things that we talked about earlier, when it comes into all this, do you really think that people are buying into a certain identity by the way that they're trying to sculpt their body or do things like I guess by definition, like you'll see people and. He'll say, I'm a power lifter, or I'm a bodybuilder, or I'm low carbing right now, or I'm on a low carb diet, or I am, I'm bulking.
I think people get trapped into that. It's probably, it's kind of seems like a bit of, I don't think you should, it's sort of an awkward, I don't know what the word is, but I don't think, it's not cool to define yourself by how you eat and how you work out. Like those are tools that you use to attain something. I mean, and I believe it's, you're just after a look. I don't think you care about like, blood levels of health markers or whatever. I think everyone's just working out to feel good about themselves and to look good. And those two things are sort of inextricable. They're not mutually exclusive. They're always like tied to each other. So that's it. You just want to look good. And, you know, tied into that is how you feel about yourself, and then tied into that is how productive you are and how your relationships go and, you know, everything else. And it sort of just rolls from there. So, you know, saying you're bulking or low carbing or you're doing power – you are a power lifter. I mean, I guess if you compete that way, that's cool, but it just seems like a weird way to define yourself. It seems like not enough. Like that's it. Like you're – that's – I mean, even being a vegetarian, like do you really know what that means? Like do you really know what you are? Do you actually even know what's in the foods you're eating and how they get processed and, you know, how many animals probably died just so you can actually have a vegetarian diet? Like, even though you don't eat them, they're probably, you know, they've probably, you know, if it has anything to do with, you know, the preservation of animal life, they're probably more involved in the process than you think they are. So sort of everything has a deeper definition than you think. So I guess what I'm getting at is, what actually defines you? Well, I guess part of the topic of today is there's certain things that define you that you have no control over, like your height, your race, the country you're born in. Like that's nothing you can't define that. That just happened to you. You just came out one day and you're like, well, what country are we in? Oh, that's what I am. I'm from Canada. My parents were Italian. Like that's, I have no control over that. It's almost pointless to even talk about it because you're like, that was just. That's it. Like, I've never understood the concept of being proud of your country or being proud of your race. You didn't have a choice. That's it. You have no choice. I can't, you know, how many people do you know that are ashamed of their race or their country? You know, I guess some people could be, but in general, it's like, well, it's not your choice, so it seems like a moot point to even talk about it in terms of pride or not. Things that you have affected, things you have done, there's something you can derive real real pride and self-confidence from. Like, you know, if you built your body to a shape and you worked hard at it, like, that's something to be proud of. Just kind of where you grew up, it's like, oh, you know, sort of everyone's sort of defaults into being proud of their race and country because they don't have a choice.
Well, it's kind of like the difference between going to a college football game versus going to a high school football game. How many guys do you know go back to their high school every Friday to go to a game? But I know plenty of guys that have graduated college that go back to football games.
No, you feel closer to it.
Well, yeah, but you had to work to a certain degree to get in.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, the rite of passage of getting grades to get into your – you're right, exactly. Your high school, you just get put into where you live in the city, but you had to work to get into university.
Right, exactly. I mean, unless your school was good, and then, you know, it's like okay, then everybody kind of bandwagons and goes back to the school and goes to the championship game and stuff like that. I mean, yeah. Hell, we do that. But, yeah, no, it's kind of the same thing. But kind of on the back thing, you think we should start saying, hey, we're AI-ing?
Well, I mean, okay, so all of this stuff about what defines you, this is how we came up with the Adonis Index ratio in the first place. This took us a long time, right? Like, we believe in all this other stuff for a long time. When we were in the supplement industry, when I was doing personal training, like, there was all these, you know, guys who were stuck in the bulk phase for years, and they're just bulking, like, all the time. And there's like, well, but he's bulking. It's, well, that's stupid. And then guys who were, like, perpetually lean, we made fun of them for being too small or whatever. And it's just – none of it matters when you get to the point of what it actually is it that you're after. And then what you're after is a look and the things that you think or you'll derive from having the look you want. And so that's it. That's the point. So that seemed like a definition we could actually hang our hats on and would endorse. Anything before that wasn't good enough. Like, anything before that didn't make enough sense to me to, I'm like, well, I mean, you know, I couldn't tell. Is it too big? Is it big enough? Like, what is it? And until we had, you know, some definable research that sort of pointed to an actual, you know, there's an end here. There's an actual number that you end on, and you don't go above it or below it. You kind of go, you zero in. It's like the bullseye. So it's not, you know, it's not just up and up forever, and it's not down and down forever. There's actually a spot with borders all around it. So that's kind of, that made sense to us, and it kind of jived with all of the research we did on anthropometrics of, you know, body size and shape, and you kind of everything we sort of started to understand in the different industries we were involved in. This was the only thing that ever made sense to us. So that's kind of how we ended up with this as a definition. So it kind of – it encompasses the definition of health, diet, and fitness and everything for us. So we don't need any of those other things anymore because all it is this number.
Right. They're already built in. So that whole idea, is this healthy or is this, you know, am I in good fitness shape or, you know, whatever, all these ambiguous terms are basically kind of swept away because they're –
Well, in order to get to a good ratio, you're going to have a good height-to-waist ratio. And all the different data that you can look at is showing that a height-to-waist ratio is a better way of measuring all the different parameters of health, whichever ones you want to choose, than BMI. So BMI is becoming a bit of an old-school measurement, and height-to-waist is actually becoming the new-school measurement on, quote, population health. But then from there – we've added in that wasn't good enough. We wanted to add in a level of muscle mass for the look, you know, for the ideal look for at least for a man, and which that's where we got the shoulder part from. And then we happened to find research that indicates that, you know, women respond to that look and as well as guys. So we're like, oh, we got another piece of it. And then that leads us to what our definition of fitness, and it's being able to exercise and build muscle to a point where we have this look, and then. The definition of what a good or bad diet is, I don't like either words good or bad, but the definition of whatever diet we would choose to use is just the one that can help you maintain this look. So when you add all those together, we've got it all covered with the look. So that's the point. The look is the point. And right. Within that look comes the fitness, the diet, the health, the however you choose to eat. Because there's going to be a way you can choose to eat that'll wreck this look, and there'll be a way you can choose to eat that'll help maintain this look. And there is no defined way. It's just how you choose to.
Right.
And it's usually just an – well, usually it is just an amount of food.
Right. Yeah. I mean, especially with all the research and how much protein and then how – you know, all the stuff we've been talking about with, you know, how to lose and even how to gain. And when we're We still need to probably do a video or something like that, kind of showing that whole absolute thing that we were talking about with calories to gain weight and how, you know, you would bulk up and yes, your muscle mass may go up, but then you have to go back down in calories and your muscle mass by default would have to go down to match that as well. So you might as well not even do that. I remember we talked about doing that.
Well, the point with muscle gain, I think people assume muscle can gain as fast as you can gain muscle. Okay, so the problem with muscle gaining versus weight loss is the speed that you can do both. You can gain weight fast, gain weight, not muscle. You can gain body weight fast through like just eating, drinking, you know, that kind of stuff, gaining fat mass. You can lose fat mass pretty fast by just not eating, not drinking. So those things can happen quickly. Gaining actual lean muscle mass happens slow. And that doesn't necessarily translate into weight on the scale. It does eventually over time, but I mean, it takes time. You can't just go on like a, you can go on a 6-month cut down and cut 100 pounds of fat off your body if you want. Like people have done it, but you can't go 6 months and put on 100 pounds of muscle. That's absurd. So there's a disconnect between how quickly your body weight can change versus what is actually changing it. So it's slow one way, quick the other. Like fat can go up and down quickly, muscle goes up and down very slowly.
Right.
But you know what I mean? So there's a disconnect there, and nobody wants to hear that muscle takes a lifetime to build. Like you know, younger guys in the forums and that talk to me on the blog, they're like, you know, I'm 17 years old, I want to be heavier. I'm like, you know, I was there too. I wanted to be heavier too, and I can tell you, you just can't be as heavy as you want by the time you're 18. Unless you use steroids, you cannot make your 25-year-old muscle happen when you're 18. You have to wait till you're 25 to have it. And that's it. There's nothing else to be said about that. I mean, I don't want to – it just takes time. It's, you know, and part of it is being comfortable with being how big you are at that age. Like, you know, do you actually expect other people to believe that you have the musculature of a 30-year-old when you're 18? Like that's kind of – now you're cheating or you're playing that card hoping people don't call you out on that card. Or maybe you just don't care. Maybe you just – that's what you want to do. You're like, nope, I'm not satisfied with this rate. I would rather do it. I mean, that happened to me. I did it. You know, I look back and now I'm like, well, okay, I did it. Curiosity killed the cat. And then, you know, that was – you know, the experiment's over and I'm over that. But I couldn't get over it for a while and I did that. So you see what I mean? Like – I mm-hmm. needed to be 250 pounds and nothing was going to stop me.
Right.
And then once I look back, I'm like, well, what the hell did I do that for? Because once I got there, I was just standing around with 200, you know, at that body weight. I'm like, okay, so now what? And I'm like, oh, nothing. So then started the long process of coming back down.
Yeah. It's kind of like the whole, like, don't do drugs campaign, you know, for kids and things like that. Or, you know, like, or I guess I've never understood why a person, like, you know that if you get a hold of some crystal meth or something like that, like, you're pretty much screwed from day one. Like, from what I've seen and heard and just rumors and all this other stuff, I mean, that stuff's pretty nasty, right? And crack and all this stuff, pretty nasty stuff. And everybody pretty much knows it's nasty stuff. But people still do it for the first time.
Yeah, there's always that first time.
Right. And then no matter how many people have been to the top of the trees and looked over, like we talked about last time, like you're talking about now, how I'm talking too about having gained some weight. And I used to be skinny. I used to not be able to bench press 95 pounds, you know, back when I was in high school. I mean, and gaining that weight and having to try to get it down, you know, people will still say, I need to eat this much to gain muscle, or I need to do this to gain muscle. I need to do this to gain muscle. And, you know, I've been kind of to the top of the mountain looking over. After it's all said and done, in one regard, you've been a totally different level, totally different mountain in that regard. But yet, and just like that same thing where, you know, we could tell people this stuff too, or we're blue in the face, but like, look, man, been there, done that. If you're skinny, don't do it because it sucks. It's not gonna matter. Well, maybe it will.
I mean, some. I don't know. Maybe some people will respond, and it's kind of like you don't know what's fire until you get burned, right? Like, kids do not want their parents to tell them not to do something. Even though the parent's probably right, the kid has to – that's just how we learn. We just learn from making mistakes. So you just – that's not even the right word. You just learn from experience. That's the way it'll ingrain itself in your head for good. It's kind of like when you go through a lousy relationship. You don't know how lousy it feels until you're through it. And you're like, I'm never doing one of those again. But, you know, whatever, you know, but you don't know until you feel it. And you're like, man, does that ever suck?
And most of the time you don't even know until like 6 months afterwards till you're over it. Or maybe in a year afterwards, and you're like, holy cow, the crap I went through. I didn't even realize that.
Right. So when you're like curious about like gaining weight or losing fat, you can opine about it, but until you go through it, you're not really sure. And then when you're in the middle of it and you've gotten through it, you're like, oh, I get it. I know how that thing worked. So
yeah, it's kind of like
– I guess we're getting – but go ahead.
It's kind of like your tape measure is your safety catch in all regards. You can do whatever you want to do, however you want to do it. You can kind of go against what we're talking about and try to bulk up if you want to or try to, you know, eat as much as you want to gain. But, you know, as long as you got that tape measure and you can measure your waist, and as soon as it starts going up, you know it ain't working like you think.
Yeah, well, it's just defiance. You almost don't want to pull it out because you just don't want to believe that it's as slow of gaining muscles, as slow of a process as it is.
Right.
So you're just praying that it's not going to your waist. So I guess this all comes back to our overriding theme of what defines you. Like, the definition of what you want you to be, that's up to you. No one else can tell you, but you can't let at least when it comes to what we talk about, the diet, health, and fitness industry are purposely not leading you to any kind of accurate or measurable definition by rule, because that allows them to keep selling you more and more ideas, books, solutions, you know, all these kind of things, because none of them really ever mean anything. And you kind of end up like a rudderless ship just sort of being pushed around by the next trend or fad.
Sure. And when it comes to diet, weight loss, and stuff like that, I mean – and even muscle gaining to a degree, same thing. I mean, basically all they're doing is selling you a little piece of the overall big pie. It's like that whole eat less is the big pie, and they just cut out their little way of you eating less, and they sell you that part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the magic.
So I guess we should wrap up here. I guess what we're trying to say is be clear of what your definition of you is and how you want to define yourself. And if you look through how you define yourself and you notice that it's a bunch of eating rules and exercise rules and some ideas that you kind of don't even know why you associate yourself with those, and maybe they're not even what you want, you take that inventory and be like, what am I doing here? Like, what actually do I want to be? And discard the ones that don't help you and keep the ones that fit into how you actually really, you know, feel. And that's like nothing we can tell you. That's just what, you know, what you got to figure that one out on your own.
Yeah, it's like we said in the last episode. I mean, be clear on what you actually want in your life, because this is what it's all about. This is just, it's all about, when it comes down to it, you know, it's all about what lifestyle do you want to live? Do you want a lifestyle of freedom, of being able to do almost whatever you want to and not being restrained by different things? Or do you want to have all these self-imposed rules by different coaches, gurus, and people like that, that all of a sudden you find out that you're not being able to live a free life at all? I mean, basically it's just, oh, I can't go out tonight because I've got to make sure I've got this going on, or, you know, it just gets crazy and damn near impossible.
Well, I mean, yeah, do you want to compete? Because if you want to compete, you have to get relatively strict for certain things. Or do you want, you know, whatever it is, like there's always levels to it, but it's just what, like, you got to come up with. I think the problem, and what we're trying to get at, is most people's definition of what they want and who they want to be is a little bit foggy or gray, and they kind of let clever marketers shove them around a bit. And we come up with what we think is a good one, and mm-hmm. we think it's good for us. So we just think a lot of guys probably, you know, through our experience, you know, we're trying to help guys, and this is what we came up with. It may not be for you, but it's you know, this is our best answer at it so far. But everyone else is, you know, some people may not, you know, resonate with it, and that's cool. But you know, as long as you know what it is that you're after, that's how it has to work. No one else, don't let anyone else tell you what it should be.
Yeah, it seems to me that a lot of the, and we'll close off after this, but a lot of the regimens that are going on now are based on people that compete somehow, some way, either in bodybuilding competitions or in pro level type competitions, like sprinters. Like, so people would all of a sudden start doing sprint workouts, like to try to emulate a sprinter to get in there and get in that shape, or, you know, they'll eat a certain way because that's the way competitive bodybuilders do it and things like that. But, you know, not realizing that it's overkill, number one, for what they really want in life. But number two, there's a specific reason that a person does that when they're on that type of a fringe. So, and it's not the same goal that you have. So
right.
They're not, it's, I guess we could really say that a lot of this stuff is overkill. I think that's probably the best word.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it comes back to our theme of simplicity.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Well, you got anything else right now?
No, I think that's good.
Yeah, guys. I mean, we got a lot of good things going, and a lot of good things planned for 2010. And I guarantee we're going to come up with some stuff that that actually we won't come up with. You guys will come up with and mention it to us, and we'll bring it to fruition or whatever in 2010 as well. So keep the comments coming, keep the ideas coming. If they're good, we'll put them into play. Again, if you want to find us, it's at AdonisIndexSystems.com. You can check us out and jump into our systems. But other than that, I'm Brad, got John, and we will talk to you later.